when we realized that this was the week that Phil was going to be away, we both kind of laughed because we looked at the lectionary schedule and read the text for today and saw that this was our gospel reading, the Good Shepherd text. And the reason we laughed is this. What some of you may not know about me is that before I became a shepherd of people, I was actually a shepherd of real sheep, like the four-legged woolly variety. When our kids were younger, we actually raised Romney sheep on our hobby farm. And so we've done the whole deal. We've done the lambing, we've docked tails, we've done shearing, we've nursed sick sheep, we've done castrating. We've done it all. Some of it we didn't want to do, but we did it. So, of course, when we realized the topic of today's passage was the Good Shepherd, Phil just laughed, and he was like, it's a great week for me to be gone. Fabulous, perfect. And so he's in Toronto, and I'm here talking about sheep, which is what Jesus was talking about. Well, sort of. He starts our text by saying, I am the Good Shepherd. This is like a signature statement for him. It's one of seven similar statements that he makes, statements that we call the I am statements because they all start in that same way, I am. So you're familiar with them, I'm sure. I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the gate. I am the vine. I am the resurrection and the life. One of my favorites, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And the one we have before us this morning to think about for a while, I am the Good Shepherd. Well, these I am statements are particularly significant in Jesus' ministry because they each reveal some part of his life and his mission. Jesus used them to powerfully proclaim to people what he had come to do. And as they heard them, probably safe to say that people would have had some sense of what he was saying, but maybe only on a fairly surface level. They certainly didn't grasp all of the meaning. We know that from our side of his death and resurrection. We realize now that in each of them, there was so much more that he was saying. With each, he was saying he was going to fulfill his mission of bringing life in a way that is much broader and deeper than anything that people could have possibly imagined or hoped. It's significant that Jesus didn't decide to say, I am like the light of the world, or I am like the Good Shepherd. No, he had quite intentionally chose the wording, I am the Good Shepherd. Jesus chose these words because these weren't just things he was doing. They were actually part of who he is. And his choice of words was very intentional to tell us that. It also tells us even more. Are those words, I am, at all familiar to you? I hope that they are, because they're kind of echoing to us from way back early on in the Old Testament. Remember that they are the words that God used to describe himself, to identify himself to Moses. You remember when Moses had that very strange encounter with God at the burning bush, when God was calling him to go to Egypt, to lead God's people out, to rescue them from the terrible slavery they were under. I personally think Moses might have been trying to talk his way out of this call. So one of the things he says to God is, okay, well, if I have to go, who shall I say sent me? I think he's hoping that maybe that's a little out. It would have been my motive if I'd have asked the question. God doesn't give him the way out, though. Remember, he says, I am who I am. Tell them, I am has sent you. Now, those listening to Jesus on the day he said all these seven I am statements probably didn't realize it at the time, but he was also saying with each of them, I am God. So already we have this sense that in Jesus' promise to be the Good Shepherd, there is more than you at first see. Well, in biblical times, people would have been fairly familiar with the idea of sheep and shepherds. They were kind of a part of everyday life in first century Israel, but they're not so much for us here. We don't live that agricultural kind of life, most of us, do we? And so I thought it might be helpful this morning if I gave you guys a little shepherding 101 lesson. Are you up for that? I have to tell you, I'm never one to be caught without the appropriate outfit on, so just bear with me for a minute. The people at the first service were far too polite. They didn't laugh. I expected them to laugh, so if you feel like you want to giggle as I put on my barn boots and my barn coat, you can go ahead and laugh. Okay. Can't do it without falling over. Well, the one thing I didn't do was move this, which I was told I should do. Okay, good. So if you show up at my house sometimes, I have to warn you, you might find me like this, because this is truly my barn coat and my barn boots. You have to look the part. Besides, I don't think Phil could have preached the sermon because he doesn't actually have the boots. I think it was a given. Here's what you need to know about sheep. The first thing you need to know is that while they might look quite idyllic from afar, grazing contentedly in a nice spring pasture, up close, the picture's not nearly as pretty. Sheep aren't usually actually white up close. They're often very dirty. They're often very smelly. And, well, it's just not pretty. It's not, really. They're just messy creatures. They don't look as good close up. They're also not the smartest of God's creatures. They really aren't. They're motivated by two things, by fear and by food. And very often, those two things, you're not very happy. Very often, those two things get them into quite a bit of trouble. It happens all the time. Because sheep aren't very smart, they need someone to look after them. They really need a shepherd. Sky, you could preach this sermon. You really could. It is the shepherd's job to look after them, to protect them, to make sure they have adequate food and water, to make sure that the pasture is appropriate, and to rescue them when they get themselves into trouble. I'm hoping that as you are hearing this, you are remembering that God often refers to us as sheep. And I really think he chose the metaphor quite intentionally, because there's a lot we have in common with them. The really interesting thing about shepherding is that it is not a job that you can do from afar. If you're going to be a shepherd, you have to be with your sheep, right in the midst of them, which is why you end up with boots and a coat that look like this. You get dirty when you're in the midst of the sheep. Now, I must confess that, outfit aside, I was not a particularly good shepherd. I had some weaknesses that showed pretty much from the outset that did not bode well for my future in farming. Let me explain it to you through a true story. So we started with two sheep on our farm, and what you do when you want to expand your flock is you breed your sheep. So we bred our sheep. The very first lamb born on our farm was a rather large ram lamb who had some difficulties being born. Now, this meant that on my very first foray into lambing, I actually had to pull the lamb. The image in your heads that you're all seeing right now is exactly what happened. I didn't like the idea any better than you probably liked it. He had some difficulties being born, and he was partially born, but then his mom was struggling, and he was struggling, and at one point, his little tongue kind of went off to the side and started to turn blue, and I knew that was a really bad sign. And so at that point, all of my squeamishness went out the window, and I just reached in and pulled, because everything in me said I had to save this little guy if I could. You overcome the fear pretty quickly. Well, the good news is he was born fine. He was big, that was part of the problem. He was strong, And within an hour or so, he was up on his wobbly legs, and he was had figured out how to drink from his mom, and he was following her around, and it all was great. Lammy was, what's apart from the bad part, pretty cool. Well, it was all good until the third day, when he had an unfortunate accident with a brick. It fell on his head and pinned him for most of the night, and it ended up crushing a bunch of the muscles in his neck. And so, apart from feeling very badly, it was a huge problem because he couldn't actually lift his head up anymore. His head just kind of hung there. And in sheep, especially in lambs, that's a major problem because if you've ever watched a lamb drink from his mom, they kind of scooch underneath and then lift their heads up. Well, he couldn't do that. So that meant that we needed to feed him, either bottle feed him or hold his head up so he could drink from his mom. Now, for those of you who've never been part of a working farm, the idea of bottle feeding a new little three-day-old lamb probably sounds pretty cool, like something you'd do at a petting zoo. And it is pretty cool for the first two or three times, right, Randy? And then it gets uncool really quick. It gets old. Because here's what you need to know about three-day-old lambs. They actually need to eat every few hours. They very quickly get weak and die if they don't eat very often. So that meant that we needed to be out in the barn every 3 or 4 hours feeding this little guy around the clock. Now, lambing season was in March. In March, it's dark for a lot of the long, long night. The weather's often not great. It's often cold and stormy. And so the reality of doing this feeding rotation was not nearly as idyllic as you might at first think. But here's the thing about me. I cannot stand to watch something die. I just can't do it. It's what makes me a pretty poor farmer, actually. You have to be a lot tougher than that if you're going to farm. And I learned that with this little lamb. So as much as every night when the alarm would go off at 3 o'clock, I would lie in bed and think, this is ridiculous, I'm not going back out there. I could never go back to sleep, because then I'd start to think, and he's going to die because you stayed in bed. So I got up, and I'd put my boots on, and I'd put my coat on, and I'd grab a headlamp, because we don't have electricity in our barn, and out I'd go, and we'd do the routine. Now, smart shepherds know there is a limit to what you do to take care of an ailing sheep. You have an entire flock, you have limited energy, you have a life. You need to figure out how far is far enough. Well, let's just say I'm not a smart shepherd at all. I'm what is commonly known as a pushover. You need to know that. Feeding this lamb around the clock was not only not practical, it was actually pretty foolish. Anyone who knows anything about sheep and shepherding knows that. So while I may have been a shepherd, I wasn't a particularly good one. Which brings us back to our text. We heard Jesus started this statement that Mac read with us with those words, "I am the good shepherd." Now, when you and I hear those words, we probably have images of sheep and shepherds popping around in our heads. Maybe we have another image that comes to our heads. Maybe it's more like our stained glass window of Jesus holding a lamb or some picture like that that we've seen somewhere. But the people who were listening to Jesus on the day when he first said these, they were more sophisticated than we are. They understood that when he talked about a shepherd, he was probably using a pretty common metaphor from that day. Shepherd was a term that, yes, did refer to people who looked after real sheep, but it also, quite commonly for God's people, referred to people who had leadership over God's people. So you may remember in some of the Old Testament passages, Moses and David were referred to as shepherds of God's flock. And the prophets, Jeremiah and Isaiah and Ezekiel, when they had been promising the leader that was going to come, the Messiah, they'd often referred to him as a shepherd. So shepherd was very commonly understood to be referring to some kind of leadership, which meant that most people would have understood Jesus was proclaiming some sort of leadership when he made this statement. He may have even been proclaiming that he was the king, shepherd king who was promised, the Messiah. Well, just to add another layer of meaning to it, shepherd was also a way that people often referred to God. Remember the opening words from Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd." So we have real shepherds of sheep, we have shepherds who are leaders of God's people, and we have God, our shepherd. Now, people probably assumed Jesus was talking about kind of the middle one, being a leader. They would not have likely thought he was proclaiming himself to be God. Remember, I said these I am statements are statements where they grow bigger, they stretch us. We understand this much, and then we discover there's this much, and then even more. They're continually stretching us. They may have thought Jesus was saying he was their shepherd king. He was really saying he was their shepherd Lord. It was bigger. Their thinking was still too small. But it's understandable, considering what he said after he said, "I am the good shepherd." Remember, we heard Max say this. He said, "The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand who is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and runs away, and the wolf snatches and scatters them. The hired hand runs away because the hired hand does not care for the sheep." When Jesus started talking about laying down his life, people must have been pretty confused. If he was saying he was the prophesied shepherd king, wouldn't he be rallying an army? Wouldn't that make sense? After all, wasn't he going to drive out the Romans and bring them freedom in their promised land in Israel at last? What kind of king talked about dying before he even came to power? There had been some pretty bad kings in Israel's history, and we know that people probably were thinking about them when Jesus was talking about those hired hands who got them into danger and then ran away. That would have been clear. He was associating the bad kings with them. But how could a king who was planning to lay down his life, how could he be good? Their thinking was still this big, right? Sometimes I think it would have been easier to have lived when Jesus lived, to have actually walked with him and heard him say the words. I think maybe I would have understood them better. But then I come to a text like this one, and I realize I don't think I would have. I wouldn't have had the benefit of knowing everything that was going to come. I also wouldn't have had the gift of the Holy Spirit living in me to lead me in all truth. Honestly, I'm not sure that it matters who you are or when you lived. These statements are just bigger than we can get our heads around, deeper than we can usually grasp. He's always stretching us. And no matter how far you've come, no matter how long you've been at this following Jesus thing, there's always more stretching to do. It's part of life with him. Which brings us back to these words that don't seem to fit. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Again, what kind of Messiah talks about dying? Well, in our heads, you're probably already sitting here thinking this, we know the answer to this, don't we? Jesus was God in flesh, come to dwell among us. In the sacrifice he made for us, he did free us from captivity, not from the Romans, but from powers far more ominous and dangerous than them, the powers of sin and death. And Jesus didn't stay dead. He rose again and then made us that phenomenal promise to always be with us even to the very end of the age, even living within us as we ask him to. Well, in our heads, and maybe even to some extent in our hearts, we understand these theological truths. But I wonder if you've ever wondered why. Not the head version of why that repeats all those reasons, but the heart version of why. Jesus said, "No one takes my life from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. Have you ever wondered why he would do that for us? It's an important question. I didn't finish the story of my lamb, did I? Let me share with you the rest. So I've been doing this round-the-clock routine with this little guy for a few weeks. And honestly, I didn't know if we were getting anywhere. It was hard to tell. There didn't seem to be any obvious improvement in him. Every few days I'd call Adele and she'd come over and I'd stand there and look at him and we'd try to figure out if we were getting anywhere or if I was wasting my time. And honestly, neither one of us could tell. He didn't seem to be improving, but he didn't seem to be getting any worse. So then we'd go on to have the other conversation, which is it time to give this up? Is it time to put this little guy out of his misery or at least leave him to his own devices and see what happens? And every time we had that conversation, I realized what a bad farmer I was. Because I couldn't bring myself to do it. I came pretty close, but I couldn't bring myself to do it. Well, one night, a few weeks in, at about 3 a.m., I'm sure, I was out in the barn, and I was sitting in the straw, and I had this pathetic-looking little guy in my lap, and I must confess to you that I was tired. I was physically tired. We'd been doing this for a few weeks. I was emotionally tired, and I was mentally tired, and I didn't know what to do. I was fading fast and wondering, what the heck was I doing sitting out in a barn on a cold March night? This is crazy. Well, this little guy and I got a little bit attached to each other through this routine, and it was a routine. I'd go out, I'd milk his mom, I'd put the warm milk in a bottle, and then I'd sit down on the straw. Our barn only has part half walls, so I needed to get out of the wind. And he gradually, over time, figured out that this was when he got to be fed, so he'd wander over to me at that point once I sat down, and I'd put him in my lap. And then I'd put my hand under his chin, and I can still feel what the woolly chin felt like. And I'd gently lift his head and feed him, and he'd drink. So I was sitting there doing that, deciding it was time to give up, to pack this in. And I heard these words come into my head. Diane, this is just a glimpse of what it means to be a faithful shepherd. It was incredible. It truly was. I was about to give up on that little guy. I'd done a lot, but you know what? I was a long, long ways from faithful. And in that wonderfully loving way that he has, God took my weakness and used it to very gently show me how strong, how steadfast, how devoted to us he is. Because you know what? I can tell you in the very core of my being, God will never give up. He'll never give up on us. He doesn't have it in him. He won't. He can't stand to see something die. He is determined to see us thrive and live with him forever. And he was determined to do whatever it took. He is our good shepherd. He is so faithful. We can't possibly imagine how big his faithfulness is. The cross is our stunning reminder of how faithful he is. That's what drove him there. His determination to never be apart from us, to never give up on us. So when you look at it, I hope you remember that. It's stunning. Now, the truth is that we are probably all in different places with this. Some of us may still be trying to get our head around this strange thought that Jesus actually died for us. Others of us may have gotten our heads around that, or at least accepted it, and then actually been changed. Something's happened. It's done its work in our heart. But as we've seen through Jesus' I Am statements, there's always more. There's always more. It's always way bigger than we realize. So this morning, as we've heard Jesus say to us, I am the good shepherd, I wonder if you can also hear him saying, and you still don't know all that that means. There's more. Much, much more. Because God's faithfulness to us knows no bounds. So I want to leave you each with a question this morning. A question that I hope you will take some time, maybe some quiet time later today, to really talk about with God, to ask God, and then to listen. The question is this. If God's promise of faithfulness is bigger than we understand even now, what would it look like for us to let him stretch us in that? What would it look like for his faithfulness to get bigger in each of our lives? I encourage you to take a few moments, maybe later today, find a quiet spot and ask him that. And then listen. Listen for the thoughts that come into your minds, the feelings that come into your heart. Pay attention in the coming days to what goes on, what happens. He'll answer. That's a prayer he's going to want to answer. Amen.
Amen.
Amen.